Oi, este es Dave Douglas, como podcast A Noise from the Deep. Obrigado por ouvir esta música. This episode features the music of Sara Serpa, who we were just listening to. Sara is a vocalist originally from Portugal who now resides in New York. Sara has 9 recordings as a leader and will focus mostly on her recent record Close Up with saxophonist Ingrid Lobrock, friend of the pod, and Eric Friedlander on cello. You may also have heard Sara singing with Greg Osby or Rand Blake, Danilo Perez, John Zorn. We had a good conversation about a lot of different topics. First, I just want to remind you that you can email me directly about this show at podcast@greenleafmusic.com. And you can access all the episodes of the podcast wherever you get podcasts. It would help to leave us a rating and a review at iTunes so more people discover the show. If you enjoy these podcasts, please consider subscribing to Greenleaf Music via our Bandcamp subscription platform. When you subscribe, you get access to our entire catalog of music. It's about 60 albums and lots of additional material. We're recording artists like Joe Lovano, Rudy Royston, Greg Ward, Linda Mahon O, Donnie McCaslin, Ryan Keberly, with plenty more to come. You also get access to the exclusive subscriber-only recordings, most recently my piece Uplift, 12 pieces that I wrote for Bill Laswell, Julian Lage, Mary Halverson, Ian Chang, Joe Lovano, and myself. In addition to supporting our operations at Greenleaf Music, your subscription money is added to our profit-sharing pool. This goes back to all the artists and for future productions at Greenleaf. To subscribe, go to greenleafmusic.com. I'd love for you to join our Greenleaf family of subscribers, and I thank you for your support. And now let's get to the interview with Sara Serpa. Thanks for listening. Sara Serpa, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Dave.
For making the time and making all these great recordings.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
We're happy to have you in New York, too.
Yeah, here. Great.
Part of the scene, absolutely. So we listened to Cantar ao Fim, which I guess means song at the end.
Yes, and it's singing at the end.
Singing at the end. It's the last track on your album. Obviously, you have a beautiful instrument, the voice, which I'm sure took many years to develop. And, but when you're thinking about making a solo vocal piece, what's your primary concern? How do you go about doing that?
I mean, you know, like this piece came from kind of improvisation, sitting in at the mountains at night. I was just singing at my phone. And it kind of came, has a different way of approaching composition. Usually I compose at the piano or just having some kind of program in my mind. And this time I just sat there and sang and recorded. So kind of improvisation.
Is that the actual recording that's on your record or did you?
No. I re-recorded it.
All right.
Wow. So then for me, I went back to that recording and just I selected parts that I liked and kind of put it together as a composition. But in specific in this trio, I wanted for each one of us to have solo performances, and I haven't explored that much. How is it my voice alone to sing alone and to really embody that, like, you know, accept whatever comes out, also accept the space that the voice can take just by itself.
So, right, because I had never heard you do that before.
Yeah. And I think I've been exploring much more of that in live performances too, where I there's a moment where I can be like, okay, this is my solo improvisational moment where I can, you know, do whatever I want. And it's very liberating. And it's also like a good challenge to think about how to use my body as an instrument. So like what colors can I use?
Trumpet is a little like that because your lip is supposed to vibrate. You have the vocal cords and the cavity and the air.
Yeah, and what was I going to say?
Well, I would just ask, like, you're from Portugal originally, and you must have decided to sing early on in your life, and then you worked on the vocal technique and the instrument itself.
Yeah.
Was that always with the goal to making pieces this way or with improvising musicians?
Actually, no. You know, my path as a singer is very typical of kind of, I think, the European environment. Like, I started singing in a choir. So as a child, there was no concern about vocal technique at all. Basically, just sing.
Get the pitches right.
Yeah, the pitches right, learn the music. And I was exposed to a lot of early music since then because the choir was dedicated to that kind of music.
You mean which composers?
So there were like a lot of early music Portuguese composers. Yeah, from 13th and 14th century.
Any names? I probably wouldn't know them.
You have like Melgaç. There was Pergolesi for sure. Like, So that was the early stage, and then I went to did the whole conservatory. So all I was a pianist for a long time, and so singing was always like kind of a parallel thing, but never, there was never a goal to be a singer. You know, it was just something I liked to do. And when I started having classical singing lessons, it was really challenging because there was no one actually able to help me with the instrument itself. Like, so you have all these difficult arias to sing, but it was physically, it was really challenging.
So did you ever find a technique or a teacher?
I found a teacher here in New York, actually.
Who's that?
My teacher, her name is Deborah Carmichael, and she teaches this approach called libero canto, which is was developed by this Hungarian man called Shamusi. And basically, it's kind of accepting the sounds that come out, you know, not having any image of how the sound should come out, and also like releasing tensions or unnecessary efforts in my body to produce sound.
She must have exercises to do that.
There are many exercises. There's a, it's not like a method. It's more, there's a lot of, you know, knowing like parts of the body that usually carry tension and how can we work around that. But there's a lot of actually physical work, you know, like understanding the tension on my neck, understanding tensions on my belly, tongue.
How long ago did you find this teacher?
I found her like maybe 7 years ago.
Okay.
It really changed.
That's a while.
Yeah, it really changed my whole life, actually.
Yeah, I can
as
imagine.
A singer. Yeah, I think before, like, I used to have this routine, like, I need to warm up before I sing. I need to have all these things ready.
Yeah.
And now I'm much more like, I need to warm up to sing certain things, and I definitely do warm up. But I also accept that if my voice doesn't sound in a certain way, it's okay, you know, and I deal with it. I trust that my body will find a way. Yeah.
Wow. That's a big trust.
Yeah. I mean, we sing and talk without thinking since we're children, and at some point,
right,
there's a moment where we are taught these rules. This is how you should do it. But there's a lot of in our bodies that actually works without trying to command or trying to control.
And would you say that this piece that we were listening to sort of reflects that? That libero canto is what the word you like, free singing, but I think maybe free singing in the sense of not being attached to any one way of sounding or performing.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe what it's more like a result of this work. More a result, not so much like this is an example of libero canto, because usually libero canto is dedicated to work on European classical music.
I see.
You know, so I learn it and I practice, but it's not what I
The end perform. Result is your yeah. own music.
The end result is my own music yeah. where I'm freer with my instrument, basically. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I accept what comes out.
That makes a lot of sense. But also the fact that the piece itself grew out of an improvisation mm-hmm. that you then shaped.
Yeah.
And from performance to performance, I would imagine that it has some similar areas yeah, and others exactly. where it is different every mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
And would you say that it's different based on what you're feeling and
exactly.
how your body is yeah. responding? That's yeah. really fantastic.
And in that sense, like I would say, I mean, for me, the challenging thing on this piece, in a live improvisation when I'm improvising, is actually starting on the right pitch, because I improvise, and then I'm alone. I start singing the melody, and then the cello comes in. So I always have to center around B-flat, which is the note that I want
yeah.
to carry through the improvisation. Yeah, or I have to have it in my mind somehow.
And do you have perfect pitch?
I do have perfect pitch, yeah.
So you're able to find the
sometimes,
B-flat.
Yeah. It just, it's not, it's, I think I'm not like actively thinking B-flat, B-flat. It's uh-huh. more like a vibrational sound that I feel in, yeah. you know, like, so sometimes I see, oh, oops, this is not B-flat. I will adjust it through the way, you know, but it's something that I can't go. I need to stay focused for the improvisation. Yeah,
that's really interesting. I think that I don't know. I think brass instruments, there's a similar thing in mm-hmm. that it's about the vibration and not so much even the pitch.
Yeah.
Feeling
mm-hmm.
what is this note going to feel like
yeah.
when it comes out,
mm-hmm.
and then being able to know what that note is going to be over
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that with a cello player like Eric Friedlander, even if you are really close, when he does come in, there's enough flexibility in the relationship between the two of you.
Yeah, and also, like, I think I'm very quick to go, okay,
to
whoops.
Adjust.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
Wow. Maybe we'll talk about Boston a little later. You were there for a while, right?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
But before that, you were in Portugal,
mm-hmm.
and you must have done some improvised music coming up before you went to Boston.
Yeah, I mean, the discovery of jazz was, or improvised music was kind of not expected in my life. You know, like, I graduated in social work, and it was towards the end of that degree that I, undergrad program, that I started going to jazz school, and that's when I
wow.
had the click, and it was kind of like, I really want to do this. I've been doing music all my life, and this is what I want to do. And so I think I studied jazz in Portugal maybe for 2 years, 3 years, and then mm-hmm. I moved to Boston.
And you must have heard some singers that inspired you too, like recordings
or in live. Portugal. In Portugal, we talked about this, about Maria João.
Maria João.
Yeah, she's kind of like a hero for me. You know, like, she's especially because she's been doing this vocal improvisation and wordless singing for a long, long time, and she's really creative and experimental and daring. So it was good to know, like, there's someone doing this in my own country that, you know, it's not so
makes
weird.
Makes a big difference,
yeah, it
right?
makes a big difference, yeah.
Did you hear American artists, too?
I did hear
Ella
it.
Fitzgerald,
yeah, yeah, I mean, when
Billie
I
Holiday.
When I was there, yeah, that's all I heard.
Yeah.
Ella Fitzgerald, you know, like, Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, Carmen McRae.
And that's probably what made you want to go to Boston to go deeper.
There were Portuguese friends studying in Boston back mm-hmm, then, so mm-hmm. there was already this connection made, you know, through Portuguese people who attended the hot club school, and then went to Boston. So I think I kind of followed that trend and went there, yeah. I mean, coming from a small country like Portugal,
mm-hmm.
where things now are a little different, but you know, more than, yeah, almost like 15 years ago, there was no, like, college with the jazz program, you know, so you only had hot club. Mm-hmm. So coming to Boston, where I get to a school where there are thousands of students, where you have all these facilities, you know, like it had a huge impact on me, actually. Yeah.
So let's listen to this piece, Quiet Riot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a trio right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from your album, Close Up.
Mm-hmm.
And the piece is called Quiet Riot, mm-hmm. and it's with Eric Friedlander on cello and Ingrid Lobrock on soprano
Track. Mm-hmm. I had worked with Eric and Ingrid before. No, Ingrid actually I hadn't worked before, but I had worked with Eric. And there was this kind of like void moment in my life where I had the opportunity to assemble a new group and actually write music for that group. And so I decided to call Ingrid and Eric and do the trio. And so I realized, like, this is going to be a total way of a completely different way of writing.
Yeah.
Because there is no chordal instrument.
Well, but you're creating harmonies with those voices.
We're creating harmonies, yeah. But there's no one laying out any harmony. Mm-hmm. And also there's no drummer, you know. So there are all these different challenges. And so I think each piece has a different challenge that I wanted to impose on me, actually.
Interesting.
And this one was like, there was kind of this rhythmic hocket that we're, how does it work? And also like sticking to just a few pitches. There's only like, I think it's like 5 or 6 pitches that I use in this piece.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like all the pitches available. So how can I create this, with these limitations, how can I create a piece for the three of us? So took a while to get it together.
You mean from a rehearsal standpoint?
Yeah, from a rehearsal standpoint, because we really need to be together on time, you know, like filling the pocket.
I was listening to the record and, you know, having been in a lot of trios, I was thinking when you perform a full concert of all of these pieces in a row must be really exhausting.
Yeah.
Because each one, like you said, has a different challenge.
Exactly.
And you really have to focus to stay together.
I do feel that I really have to focus.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And also, like, I'm the leader.
Right.
So I'm the person who has to conduct everything. You know,
oh, I thought you were going to say you're the person who has to pay everyone.
Oh, that's true, too. But conducting, you know, like, I think I'm getting better in conducting on stage. Because before I was like, okay, we'll go there. But now I realized, like, I need to kind of, okay, now we're in three. Now let's do this. Now we're going to the next section. And so I'm using my body in a much more, like, comfortable way.
That's really interesting. But also because Eric and Ingrid are both such wonderful, flexible, sensitive players.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the fact that they were just there for you made it easier for you to sort of adjust.
Definitely. And there was a lot of work together, and I really love working with them, because there was, you know, sometimes you feel you go to a rehearsal and people do whatever you ask them to do, and that's it. Like, there's kind of no a compromise on you know what you want. But since the beginning, like, what I felt with Eric and Ingrid was like they were really committed to make this music work. And so there were things like, oh, maybe this doesn't work too well, you know, and having their input was really important throughout the whole process.
I think you can hear that on the record.
That's great.
That it has a feeling of, well, I don't want to say collective, that's the wrong word, but, you know, people working together. It's clearly your music.
Yeah.
And your conception.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that must be something you think about when you write these kinds of pieces for a trio like this.
Yeah, it's, I think, like, it was more like a challenge that I didn't know what hardships I would have or what struggles I would have. You know, it's more like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then once we start doing it, it's like, oh, wow, this is going to be much more challenging. And also, like, I felt it for me as a singer, it was good because I had to find my sound within this trio and fill a space.
Mm-hmm.
I think before, like, playing with the piano or a guitar, there's always this attempt to blend, you know, like to...
Mm-hmm.
And in this trio, there is no attempt to blend. It's more like we are three individual musicians creating this music together, but there is no, like, oh, I can... We can blend sometimes, but each one has an individual voice. Yeah.
Well, it's right to uphold the counterpoint of the writing itself.
Yeah.
Everyone has to be strong on their own and independent.
Mm-hmm. Also, taking advantage of having such great improvisers, such, you know, like Eric and Ingrid, didn't really want to limit them, you know, also allow them to have a space for expression.
You did so much great work in quote-unquote quintets, you know, jazz format, where there's a rhythm section and maybe another horn player.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I heard you was with Greg Osby some years ago now. And I didn't know that you were simultaneously developing this other side. I want to play a little bit of you playing with Rand Blake, mm-hmm. and it feels like there's a lot of improvisation going on this particular track. Is that right?
Actually, that's a piece written by Rand,
okay.
and there's only like this little short melody. I really love that short melody, and so I asked Rand, can we play this song? But then it really depends on how Rand wants to interpret it. So I really honor what he wants to do.
Great improviser. So this is Field Cry with Rand Blake. That's really beautiful.
Thank you.
So, right, like you said before we listened to it, it is what I would call the supreme meeting of improvisation and composition, right? There's yep. like a little snippet that Rand wrote, mm-hmm. and then in the moment of performance, the alchemy of you guys being there together.
Yeah, I want to say that, you know, like, although when I perform with Rand, there are many unexpected things that happen along the way. There's always some kind of plot that we follow. And Rand follows, he has an amazing memory. Like, he doesn't mm-hmm. need anything written down. Basically, he just like, remind me the set list. And then I just tell him before the show. And he knows everything, you know. So basically, he kind of has his plot in his mind. And then within that plot, there's a lot of freedom. So, yeah. What I feel with him is like he might modulate to some key that I'm not expecting, and I just have to go with him mm-hmm. and then come back. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. I appreciate that moment, actually, to the challenge.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you first met him, were you were his student?
Yeah, I heard him playing at Jordan Hall, mm-hmm. and I was really fascinated by his playing. And I also had heard some things with him and Gene Lee, mm-hmm. and I really admired his approach to comping behind the singer. So I didn't really know what to expect from the lessons, but basically I had private lessons with him for a year. And our lessons were mainly playing together. And so we started developing a repertoire without planning it. It was more like, okay.
Just duo.
Yeah, just duo. Yeah.
He knows like hundreds of thousands of tunes,
yes,
right?
He knows hundreds of thousands of tunes. And also he loves to work with singers. He really has a fascination by the voice, human voice. Yeah. So.
Do you still play with him?
Yeah. Well, occasionally. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's 83, I think.
Yeah, 83. He's still teaching at New England Conservatory, and he's fully dedicated to the school year.
So whenever you're listening to this, it's now 2018, and Rand Blake is 83. So. Just to put a timestamp on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's still teaching.
He's still teaching, yeah.
Now, you have this duo with Andre Matos, who I suspect you know pretty well.
Yeah,
he's my a close
husband.
Friend of yours. Oh. That's great. But did that predate all of this, or did you meet him more recently?
No, we met in Boston, actually.
I see.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, he was studying there when I moved. Yeah.
You have a son.
We have a son, yeah. 4-year-old son.
Oh, boy. That's a lot of work, but you're still playing quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a very different duo than the one that you do with Rand Blake.
Yeah, the duo with Andre, it was more like we had been playing for a long time together, but never actually took time to write music for ourselves. Mm. So whenever there was this duo gig opportunity, oh, let's play some standards and some songs we love, but never actually focus, how can we make this like really specific work of the duo? And at some point it was like, okay, this is going to be the year we'll work on it. And so we spent a lot of time on the first album, Primavera, which kind of coincided with pregnancy, being pregnant, and the initial idea like transformed itself throughout months, where we started using the studio as also like a place for creating. So it wasn't just like do stuff and then come home, but it was more like, oh, we can add some layers here, we can add some instruments. So it was a very different process, yeah. So we created songs and arranged them in the studio, and we all kind of played different instruments.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you're playing piano.
I'm playing piano, and he plays the electric bass, and then on All the Dreams we had Billy Mintz coming into some kind of percussions. Primavera, Leo Genovese came for one song, and Pete Randy, Greg Osby. So we had like different guests just coming do some little colors here and there. Yeah.
So who wrote this tune, Lisboa?
I did.
Okay, so we're going to listen to it, and I'm going to try to pronounce your husband's name properly. Andre Matos.
Exactly.
Lisboa.
Lisboa.
Escadinhas travessas.
beautiful.
Thank you.
So it is overdubs. You're playing piano.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Billy came in and played percussion.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote the lyric too.
I did.
Which I confess I don't quite understand all the words in Portuguese.
The lyrics are about basically, you know, that I had this taxi ride in Lisbon where I told the guy, like, can you take me to this street? And he was like, where is that street? I was like, so you don't know all the streets in Lisbon? And he said, like, you know, there are 14,000 streets in Lisbon, and there you have alleys and hills. And so that's the first part of the song, the text, is that, like, you have, like, it's 14,000 streets, alleys, and hills. And I think it's mainly about leaving a place where I grew up and returning to it and having all these memories, but you feel you belong, but you don't belong anymore. So, yeah, I think probably every immigrant or whoever had to leave hometown feels that way. Like, you remember things that happened. You walk around some streets and there are memorable events, but it was really long time ago.
Right, but it's a powerful poetic image.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was fed to you by this taxi driver.
Yeah. With no intention.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But in that sense, do you feel like the project with André is more about delivery of song and poetic story?
Exactly. Yeah, I do feel like it's about being very concise. Like, not, there is improvisation, but it's not like there was a kind of a deliberate intention of making it some short songs, you know, like being really, what is the core of each song and how can we really make it
delivering the song way that you hear done on pop records, more like get to the point of the lyric.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, there are many songs that don't have lyrics also. So, mm-hmm. But it can be challenging on a duo record also to have like this really long improvisation sections. At least we felt that at the moment. And
when you perform live,
there is improvisation, and sometimes we have special guests.
I see.
Yeah. So.
But the songs themselves, that's still what you're presenting with the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We open them up for improvisation, for solos.
So that's different than a lot of the other projects that you do.
Yeah, it is different. I think, like, the first album was very, like, intense, you know, like, that sense, like, being really, like, in this bubble, creating it together. Mm-hmm. And the second album, too, we were pretty much, like, raising our son, and he was really young still, so...
And now that he's all of four, all of that is over.
Now we're all, like, independent and have our own projects. No, but it definitely represents a moment, you know, like, and there's also this kind of focusing on beautiful things, you know, like even poems or melody, or even creating environmental sounds, you know, like I think there's a lot about
sometimes that. That's hard to get to with people that you don't know as well.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what my question was going towards, right?
Yeah.
That this is story and poetry and lyricism in a way that's different than other projects.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of something that's totally different from other projects, you sing with this group called, do you say Mikale?
Mikale,
And it's dedicated to performing the works of John Zorn from the Masada book and in your own arrangements.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to play this little track that I believe is your arrangement.
Yeah, it is my arrangement.
Belial. Bye. Belial with Mikale.
Mm-hmm. We have Sophia Ray, Malika Zara, and Ayelet Rose Gottlieb.
And you arranged that one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Sam from London wants to know about working with the words and adding your own touches to these Masada pieces.
Yeah. I mean, in this record, I had three pieces to arrange.
Yeah.
And so basically each song is about an angel. So there was some kind of research about who's this angel? I think Belial is the fallen angel. So then, you know, like John, just basically, I don't know if everybody knows about it, but there are all these books of the songs of angels.
We're talking about John Zorn.
Here, yeah. And, I'm sure you know. They're very short pieces. Like you have like maybe sometimes 2-3 lines with different elements. And so for example, this specific piece, there was like, I really want to remain faithful to what John wrote. Like there was this pattern, like this line in 5, you know, like there is this scale used or tonality. But then like I have 4 voices to arrange. So how can I still have this groove going on, and how can we create like some kind of rhythmic stuff with this material? And then I just picked like a little piece of a poem by Fernand Pessoa about fallen angel.
Did you confer with John before picking that text, or I'm just curious because I know he's really into Pessoa also.
Oh, really? Like I actually
didn't
know
that.
No. I really did it on my own.
And great. Wow.
I think he liked it.
I think that's why it worked. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. Mainly this piece is mainly wordless. There's only a moment about the lost paradise.
And you then found a rhythmic link up with the music itself to get the lyric in.
Or I created a little interlude.
I see.
Where the words could come in. I think maybe John had some chords in the original piece, so I used those chords to create, or the melody to use that text and then go back to the dum, 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 dum. Yeah. I mean, you know, like Mikale, right now, like we only 2 of us live here in New York. And then you have Ayelet, who's been moving around places. Now she's on the east coast of Canada, but before she wasn't. And Malika was in Morocco, and now she's moving back to France. So there was really like, we have to find the time to make the recording. So we congregated in New York. We spent maybe 1 week working on it, and then everybody split again. So I think John, like, then it was kind of like, giving it to John. John mixed it, and he loved the album. Yeah. We had good feedback. Yeah. I don't think I had like a specific feedback to my piece, but because John is so involved in so many other projects.
Well, like, but also he has a lot of confidence in Mikale as a band and in all of you as individuals. And I know him a little bit.
Yeah.
And he doesn't give that kind of freedom to a lot of groups.
Oh, really?
And so the fact that, I mean, every time I hear you guys play live, I'm sort of blown away in new
wonderful.
Ways. And there is the Jewish cultural element to the music, and that's very personal to John and his compositional language and this area of his work. Is that something that you thought about or wanted to reflect in some way?
I mean, we do have songs in Hebrew and in Yiddish, you know, so there's each one of us brings different elements of our own culture. There's a lot of John is the melodies he gives and the music elements are the ones we remain faithful to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Ayelet brings definitely her Jewish side. Malika brings her African side from Morocco. Mm-hmm. And Sophia from Argentina, Latin America. You know, so there's... I mean, I'm blown away every time we perform together because we're all... approach improvisation in a, such a different way, coming from different places. So it's always cool to see, like, within the arrangements, then what happens afterwards.
I guess part of what I'm curious to hear you talk about is this organization that you're involved with called We Have Voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's, is it 14 women coming together to create a space for a dialogue to happen about better conditions and conduct
also,
in jazz, not just jazz, creative
performing
music world,
arts,
right?
Yeah.
Performing arts.
Yeah, I think we all navigate different performing arts worlds. Yeah, I think we came together, you know, first of all, we addressed gender discrimination and sexual harassment through our open letter, but also, like, you know, asking ourselves and everybody to commit to be aware of these things that have been happening and no one has been talking about them. But I think above all, like, I really see it as being a... It has been really a great way for me to learn, you know, like it's not easy to have a dialogue with 14 people who are so different and come from such different generations, races and countries and backgrounds. So it's a practice itself to be able to listen to each other and to create something together. But we definitely want to create positive change, I think, you know, not so much... point fingers, but how can we empower people to be aware of, you know, racial discrimination, gender discrimination? How can we create more equity, you know, in situations that have been so unbalanced? So the latest thing, our initiative was code of conduct that we've had so many institutions adopting it. Which looks like it was a needed document, you know, for people to have at their venues or, you know, back rooms, backstage. You know, it has to do with also our own experiences as performers, like navigating all these worlds and understanding that there have been maybe situations where, because we didn't have information, we accepted certain things and not... Actually, information is power, you know, like because then you can name situations, name things, and see. I really think about it, like one of the things that struck me with this document was thinking about my workplaces, you know, like what is a workplace? Because it tends to be so blurred, and when am I working and when am I not working? And establishing that boundary is really important for even for my mental health. Yeah, so
that it opens up the thought process, the healing process, the learning and growing process for all kinds of people mm-hmm. on all sides of yeah. the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And for people, I think, not to just rush into, well, here's the solution.
Yeah.
Or this person has to stop doing that. Or, you know, I need to be able to do this. But rather, you know, let's think about the spoken and unspoken ways in which these biases are being acted on.
Exactly.
And having an effect on
yeah.
lives.
And it's systematic. You know, it's everywhere. It reflects on our world, our professional world, because it's everywhere. But I don't think it's also like we are not like perfect human beings telling people this is what we should do.
Well, I'm sorry. I thought that the 14 of you were...
We are all
I'm so
working,
disappointed.
You know? Oh, I'm sorry.
Wow. Now there's a flashy revelation.
We are not perfect. We all work. We are all doing our own work, you know, and and we are all checking our own biases, you know.
Yeah.
It's a process. It's not, and we are, basically, there are no answers. This is all, it's new. It's the
well,
moment.
So let me just say thank you for helping me open up to that process too
great.
A way that I hadn't previously. And I feel like I'm growing and I'm far from perfect. None of us are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Thank him or her. And, but I do think that, it's not just the Me Too moment. It's not just all the big flashy headlines in
mm-hmm.
the news. It's each person coming to an honest reflection about what's going on and
yeah.
what has gone on. And
mm-hmm.
that's not easy. And yet, at the same time, seeing what your organization is doing gives me confidence that people can come together and think constructively and mm-hmm. create a new space
mm-hmm.
in which we can live a better life together.
Yeah. I mean, I hope... I don't think we created this for ourselves, really. You know, like, I think we are actually... This is much more for the future. I see it, you know, because I didn't have any of this information when I was a student,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Yeah.
I navigated so many strange environments, and sometimes having this information when you're younger, like, it really helps you making some decisions, you know, like, instead of feeling something is not quite right, but you do it anyway, you know, like, and this doesn't need to be like men or women. I mean, it's everybody. Like, we can all be in these situations of vulnerability.
Well, thanks for making the time and for your wisdom
you.
And your artistry.
Thanks.
I didn't know this poet whose words
she's not a
used.
Poet, actually. She's Lucy Rigaret. She's a feminist and a philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
She was born in 1930, I think. She's French.
Mm.
So she has all these amazing books, and I've been working around some of her texts, and this particular text resonated with what I was going through at the moment about motherhood, actually, and about the invisibility of motherhood.
Mm.
So I used, it's, yeah.
It's a beautiful piece, and it somehow feels really central to the album.
Mm-hmm.
The record is called Close Up. We didn't talk about Kiarostami and the thing, which,
mm-hmm.
You know, also really, really interesting about being an artist and being honest and inhabiting yourself
mm-hmm.
or other worlds and being a director versus being an actor.
Yeah.
All of this
mm-hmm.
is laid out in your notes, and I hope people go and
yeah.
and find the album. But somehow I feel like this piece, Woman, is kind of really central
mm.
to the vision of it. Also the arrangement for the instruments.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of that moment of close-up. You know, like, there's definitely these different things going on, and... you know, I feel like now I'm much more independent, but the first 3 years of being a mother, like, where you feel like your whole body, like, is serving a life, you know.
I never did that.
But it's not just like the whole incubation process, but it's also like afterwards you feel like your identity disappears. You know, you're only a mother for a while, you know, like in...
But even at four, I mean, you're still serving
quite a bit. Yeah.
With love and with dedication, with all of
that.
Still.
Yeah, with all of that. But there was really this identity thing that I felt... I feel like I... You know, it's very invisible to others, but people don't really realize. I mean, and even like being an artist, where you expect people to be open-minded and accepting. And I mean, I can just pinpoint something like about, for example, artist residences, where women who are mothers, like they have absolutely no opportunity to do residences because either...
There's no support.
There's no support structure, or even like they say, no kids here. We don't want any kids. sometimes you're faced with these things like no children, and what are you supposed to do? You know, like you're, So it was fair. It's much more a deeper thing, but it kind of the words say it all. You know, like
well, thank you. It's such a beautiful record and all of these projects. It's great to hear it. And I can't wait to hear where it goes from here.
Thanks, Dave. And,
it's really
thank
wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Woman like the creator God engenders with her breath, but she does it from the inside without demonstrations. Ooh.